Start hour number two. That was a fun, easy, seamless hour number one. You had me. You had Jerry Rice. In other words, two Hall of Famers. Not necessarily in that order. You had Matt guarantee a masterpiece of a call, only to get his golden ticket snatched. And that's hour number one. Sometimes it's easy. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Needs to know what it takes for a home to fit your budget and your family. Rocket can. All right, then. Starting off hour number two, I've got Chris Finch, T-Wolves head coach. We are efforting him. We're going to run him down any second. The beef segment, in case you missed it in hour number one, it's going to be at the top of the third hour, and already people are lining up for it. So if you have something you want to beef about, hit me now. 1-800. You can get in line right now. 1-800-636-8686. NFL draft prospect Kenneth Walker III will join me in the final segment of the day. I've got an ATP coming up. I've got the Jim Rohn podcast, the original Side Hustle, episode 206 with Nick Mangold. I've got the Side Hustle to the Side Hustle, the Reinvention Project, with an absolutely incredible guest, James Lawrence. My man did 100 triathlons in 100 consecutive days. You know what a triathlon is? 2.5 miles in the water, 112 miles on a bike, and an actual marathon running. Imagine doing one of those in one day. Imagine doing any of those three things in one day. Then imagine doing two of those things in one day. Then imagine doing all three of those things in a single day and you have a triathlete. Then imagine doing it again the next day. Then imagine doing it 3 days in a row, 5 days in a row, a week, a month, 3 months. This guy did it 100 days in a row. This is why I have the Side Hustle to the Side Hustle, to remind us we can all do a hell of a lot better. So that's the Reinvention Project with Jim Rohn. That's insane. So I know about this guy. I've been following this guy's story and his background. I've never spoken to him, and I can't wait to speak to him. And that's why I've got that podcast. Look for that wherever you find your podcasts. Go to my social media feed. I know, hey, Rome, we just want to call people fat. We're not into that. Fine. However, if you keep an open mind, I think you might like it a lot. I'm really proud of the Side Hustle to the Side Hustle. And I'm getting a lot out of it, and I'm getting much better. So keep that in mind. This dude did 100 tries in 100 consecutive days. Like, I've never heard of anything like that in my life. And it's fact. 1-800-636-8686. Oh, and Matt lost his golden ticket. All right, as promised. We are joined right now by the head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves. First full season as Minnesota head coach. He was named T-Wolves head coach back in February. He was the D-League Coach of the Year back in 2010. Minnesota is up to third in the Northwest, and they are at Golden State tomorrow night. Chris Finch is my guest. Chris, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to have you on. All right, so you beat Portland last night in a game where you were down by 13. You battle back. You find a way to win. Chris, I want to get into the performance that you got from Anthony Edwards in a minute, but generally, how pleased were you with the way your guys dealt with the adversity and the elements and found a way to get it done last night on the road?
Yeah, very pleased. You know, we had talked before the game about, you know, trying to kind of up our intensity. We've been at this point and trying to push above 500 a half a dozen times so far this year, just couldn't really ever get over the hump and stay over the hump consistently. And a lot of it had to do with kind of immature approach, just as the young team has. Last night, we didn't start the game particularly well, didn't play our best basketball, but then we rallied in the second half, had great energy, a lot more purpose. And, you know, sometimes you just got to find a way to win ugly, particularly on the road, in a tough place to play against the team that had been playing very well. So, all in all, we're pleased with the win, and, you know, we got to keep building off of this.
Right. A nice win, a gritty win. And then Anthony Edwards, 49, three steals, three blocks. 14 of his points came in that fourth quarter, and that was all after he hurt his knee in the previous game. I mean, what an effort from this guy. What did you make of his performance overall, but especially in that fourth quarter?
Yeah, he's got that it factor, Jim. He's a special player. He's going to be a special player in this league. there's still so much of the game that he's trying to figure out, and particularly at this level when he sees a lot of different types of looks coming at him fast, and teams are trying to keep him off balance. He's just trying to work through it, but he's got an incredible sense of timing on when to step up, try to take over a game. Very, very explosive. Once he feels, him moving into this, like, rhythm and phase of the game where he feels he can dominate, he just can put together really, really good runs, plays with great confidence. You know, what I like about him is that he's really starting to round out his game. He played great defense on C.J. McCollum, held him 5-for-15 shooting, which is not an easy cover. And, you know, he, as you mentioned, he did other things as well. He rebounded, he got some steals, he got some blocks. And if he can become a complete two-way player where he fills up a stat sheet, that makes him, all NBA caliber, and it certainly helps us.
I love the guy. Chris Finch joining us. I love the guy because, like, Chris, when you talk about the it factor, it's kind of a cliche, but it's so true. It's hard to explain it, but you know it when you see it. Let me try and explain it. After the game, he had a number of great lines such as, "I feel like Black Jesus." Quote, "I saw the man in front of me and I saw the fear in his eyes. I guess that was all she wrote," end of quote. I could go on. Like, that kind of confidence might rub teammates the wrong way, maybe, but how authentic and genuine is it from him? And then how much more do his teammates love him as a result?
Yeah, that's the great part about it, Jim. It's like, he is beloved by his teammates, and it's all genuine. It's not a cockiness that he's just throwing out there to cover up some insecurity. He really believes that he can do all the things he says. And when he fails at it, he owns that too and recognizes that he has a lot to learn. But it doesn't break his stride. It doesn't break his confidence in himself. He knows that he could be great. He's just always the same every day. He's got a great smile on his face. He comes to work in the same manner, in the same mood. You can coach him hard. He likes it. He responds well to it. These are things that, like, that belie a maturity that most kids that, players at 20 years old don't have when they're trying to figure out their way in the NBA. He knows who he is as a person, and as he starts to figure out who he is as a player, that's going to, even propel him further. Like, he knows what he can do, but he's still trying to learn and figure all that out.
Well, it seems to me, Chris, that if you've got a great, great young player who already has figured out the part about he shows up the same way every single day and he's consistent, like, he understands consistent effort and showing up with intent and showing up a certain way, and you can coach that same guy hard, it's got to be such an amazing thing for a coach. What about Karl-Anthony Towns? 17-17 last night and a force in the paint. How important was it for him to battle on the glass and clog the paint defensively while Edwards was having a night like the one he had?
Yeah, that's Cat's been huge. He's having one of the most efficient seasons in the league. He took 7 shots last night. He had 17 points, almost unheard of. Cat's been facing a lot of double teams. They've been playing him with a smaller defender, and then they bring the 5 over top and just try to hound him all night. And he's really kind of learned how to deal with that, not push himself into the game unnecessarily, find other ways to impact it. That's oftentimes on the glass or with his passing. His playmaking was elite last night. We didn't connect on a lot of the passes that he threw, but he made all the right plays. He let the game come to him. And then, of course, he makes some big shots when you need him to most. He's having an all-star season. He's having what I believe is a damn near all NBA season, and he's figuring out, as all, like, again, younger players need to learn to do. Like, everybody wants to win, Jim, but, like, part of the process of winning is how do you share the floor with other really talented players? And while our talent is young and they're all trying to figure that out, like, he's really kind of mapped that out, and he's able to put up numbers in lots of different categories and not have to be the man every single night, even though he is the man on our team.
Such a great point. Chris Finch joining us. And then, of course, it helps when you've got veterans who have been there and understand this. You've got one of my favorite guys in the league in Patrick Beverley. Earlier this year, he had an amazing quote about you. He said of you, quote, "That's my guy. I don't have a lot of guys. So if I say he's my guy, it means a lot," end of quote. It's almost a perfect quote from a guy like that because it's some of the highest praise you could ever get from Patrick Beverley. You were with him in Houston back in the day. What's it like coaching and working with him now?
It's really a pleasure. I mean, I've got a great relationship with Patrick. I was there when he came in as a rookie. I've always said that, like, he's the same as day one. He has that same chip on his shoulder to prove to himself and everybody else every single day that he belongs in this league and that he can impact winning at a high level. And he's done that. And he brings that same approach every day. That's been huge for us as a team. As a team, again, full of young players, you know, trying to figure out who they are, trying to figure out how to win, try to come together as a team. He's changed our personality. He's given us a defensive personality, a defensive identity, a mindset, and an approach where that side of the ball matters. Most of these guys come into the league, you know, with an offensive acumen, and defense is a secondary thing. But he's made it a priority for us. And, you know, he's had our back, and he's very good with the players. Like, he gets on them when they need to, but he's positive. You know, in a lot of high leverage situations where, you know, guys could be, you know, let a bad play or a period of play get them down, he's always very positive. You know, just get to the next play. It's a long game, long season, all these types of things. So he's been great for our staff and for our players.
So I got to ask you about this. I've asked this question, Chris, before of other people as it relates to somebody like Patrick Beverley. So I think I know the answer, but I'm just going to keep asking it. I don't know why, because I think I know the answer. But when you talk about that chip on the shoulder that he has and that he's never lost it, he's had it since he got in the league. And even to this day, he has it, and he has it every single day. Chris, what I would pay to get some of that, either in an ejection or in a pill? Like, is there any way to learn that, manufacture that, get that, or is it only a product of your experience and your knowledge? Because I just want some of that, and I'm not sure how to get it.
Yeah, I mean, everybody who's achieved something at the highest level at some point in their life has experienced it, because, you know, you have to be that way to get ahead in life. But I honestly believe it's like pre-wired in you if you're going to bring it like this every single day. But what it does do is it can rub off on, you know, the teammates that are looking for leadership, teammates that need direction, teammates that need an example on how things should and can be done or what you can achieve. If you really give it your all, there's a lot of people, you know, that are afraid to give it their all because they're afraid to fail, because they don't want to own up that, hey, I might not have been good enough, even though you were great in your own right. And Patrick doesn't suffer from that, like, insecurity. He doesn't, he's happy to lay it all out there and let it be what it is. And that says a lot about anybody, and you need that from leadership.
I think that's gold right there, what you just said. Chris Finch joining us. All right, so before I let you go, we're talking about an organization that has not had a lot of playoff success over the past decade and a half, but you are right there, currently right in the thick of the playoff chase. So how do you approach that with your teammate? Is that something that you openly speak with them about, or is that just not a part of that process? Do you shut that out and just worry about being where your feet are?
No, we actually speak about it. We address it from time to time. You know, not every single day. We try not to make too much of certain games, but I feel it's really important to, as you're trying to build a culture and expectation and put down a standard of performance, like, it has to relate to something. Like, it has to relate to a goal, whether it be a short-term goal, has to feed a medium-term goal, has to feed a longer-term goal, and that longer-term goal has to be the playoffs. Like, that's what we feel like we can do if we put, you know, all of our eggs in the basket, and we play the way we're capable of playing. And we know there's going to be inconsistencies. So through those inconsistencies, we use the playoffs as a kind of a standard to say, hey, like, if we want to be the team we think we want to be, we got to be better than we were last night, or we got to be better than that tomorrow night, you know? So we definitely draw a reference to it. I don't think we should be afraid of it. It's what we're trying to do.
Last thing, I love the standard, the notion of the standard, and the standard is the standard. Another one of those cliches that sounds like a cliche, but if you see beyond, quote, it being a cliche, there's something to it. You've got Golden State tomorrow night, and you beat them by 20 a week and a half ago. They were without Steph Curry and Draymond Green, but Chris, obviously, they were the standard for a long, long time, and are trying to be once again. How does the 2021-22 version of Golden State look to you?
You know, I think, to me, it's obviously, you know, coming through the injuries and the COVID replacements and all that kind of stuff has, you know, has rocked everybody's boat, and them, you know, theirs included. But before that, and I'm sure they'll probably find it again coming down the stretch of the season here, they look to me a lot like the team, the pre-Durant teams. I mean, they had such a great rhythm offensively, such commitment defensively, and, you know, Draymond drives that defense with the basketball IQ that's, like, off the charts. Like, he's making things happen defensively out there just through intelligence and effort. I think they were playing at a super high level, and they play such a different brand of basketball with other movement. It's very hard to guard on any given night. And I see it as legit. I see it as real. And, you know, it's going to be certainly a tough game for us tomorrow night, but I see them playing at a very, very high level.
I really like what you said about Draymond. I think that, I mean, obviously, those who know, know.
Yeah.
Those who know about Draymond. Those who don't know get caught up in all the histrionics. Man, this guy's IQ is off the charts, isn't it? Basketball IQ?
Yeah. Oh, it's incredible. Like, I think you see now, like, just how important he is. You know, when his offensive creativity, he creates so much offense for everybody around him. He's thinking two or three passes ahead, which is, like, what a savant does. Defensively, he knows exactly which reads and which places to cover and, you know, how to prioritize any given situation that might be dangerous. And he's like, and then he puts the effort and the work in, and he's, you know, he's got all the intangibles.
So Minnesota is in third right now in the Northwest. They've got that big opportunity tomorrow night against Golden State. Chris, I want to say this from me to you. I really appreciate you coming on the program. I always look forward to the conversation. That was another tremendous conversation. So thank you very much for doing that. I appreciate you. That was fun.
Hey, I appreciate you having me on. Thanks, Tim.
Chris Finch joining us. I mean, I really appreciate that. And I didn't really get into it this time, but he is really big, not only on building culture, as every coach in the history of the world is, but on building relationships. And that quote about Patrick Beverley saying, I don't have a lot of guys, but that right there is my guy. Players love him. Love him, Chris Finch. And when you have a conversation like that, if you listen to what he said, you can see why guys are so connected to him and play so hard for him. I really enjoyed that conversation, as I always do. Talking some T-Wolves ball, and they're in third in the division, and they went through a tough stretch earlier this year. So, between now and the top of the hour, you want to get your beef together. Chalk looks even more pale than he normally does, and he normally looks like a vampire. Dude, they must be coming at you hard.
People love my calculus.
Doing a good job, Chalk. I like it. I like it, dude. I like it. I like your effort. I like the way you've grown into this role. Keep it up. Stay strong. Stay pale. Stay pasty. It's all right, Rit. I still like you too, dude. Don't be giving me that what about me look. You too, Rit.
Finally.
And Albie's already a legend. I'm just talking about the guys on the other side of the glass. Everybody getting ready. I'm getting ready to get on a plane. Going to KC. Can't wait to get back there. Why? It is the AFC Championship game. It is an amazing matchup. I love my real estate. Limited as it may be on the NFL today. And it's going to be a little warmer this time. Got me some hand warmers yesterday. Got me some boot warmers yesterday. My man David August is going to get me a coat. Good news, bad news. Good news is my man David August is going to get me a coat. Bad news is I will get the statement at the end of the month on my credit card. Hey, you can't deny, though, my man makes everybody look beautiful. He's got good stuff. The question is, will it be functional? He knows. He knows. He's like me. I'm a Cali guy. Hook me up. I want to look good and I want to be warm. So that's coming up on Sunday. The NFL Today on CBS. I'm waiting for all the details, the start time and all of that. But as soon as I know, you will know. But we are traveling once again. So I've got more on that. Listen, what is your beef? By now, I think everybody knows, but there are still some strays that wander in here. What that is a once-a-week opportunity, and you might not get through. Every single time we do this, we leave people on hold, and there's social that we don't get to, because there's a lot of really pissed-off people. It can be about anything. Hit me up. But send it. Even if we don't get to it in the segment, there is some residual play on the back end. All right, so with that in mind, I'll take a short time out. I do want to get into the Hall of Fame. And whether or not I'm outraged over what happened again this time. You know, the thing that happens every time. That's coming up. Whether it's after a hard day of work, or maybe you're just kind of kicking back on the weekend. We all love to relax and watch live sports. Nothing better, right? Well, there is actually something better. watching live sports and having a little bit of action. This is why I'm going to recommend that you download the amazing WinBet app. Whether you're a recreational player or a serious handicapper, WinBet is your ticket to every exciting wager, from straight bets to parlays, teasers, and any exotic prop wager that you can come up with. Right now, you know I'm looking at conference championship weekend. I'm all about it. WinBet is the place for all of your NFL playoff action. The app is easy to use. Plus, everybody knows the brand. One of the biggest and best brands and respected brands in the gaming industry. So get off the sidelines, get in on the action, download that WinBet app on Google Play or from the Apple Store as quickly as possible. Get yourself in the game. Win with WinBet. Offer is subject to change. Terms and conditions at winbet.com. You do have to be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough WinBet is available. If you or somebody you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
So moments ago, I told you as soon as I have more details about the weekend, I will get them to you. Well, of course, I already had the details, and now I'm going to get them to you. Sunday on CBS. You've got two of the NFL's best young quarterbacks. We know this. Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, AFC Championship game. We get you set for the game starting at 2 Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, with JB and the fellas on the NFL Today. AFC Championship game, Sunday, 3 Eastern, noon Pacific, only on CBS. All right, so again, I got to get my time zones right. 2 Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. There you go. I'll be there. Got my assignment. Talking about both matchups. All right, so really quickly. It seems kind of lazy, but sometimes I can just kind of sit back and read your reaction and react to it. I can react to your reaction, and it actually works. Here's somebody in Minneapolis who gets it. Mike in Minnie. Finch is a great dude. Willingly took a job with the losingest team in major sports history, excited for his future with this squad and the young talent they have. Wore a bizarre number of alien sightings, reported whenever Sam Cassell comes back to watch his old team. All right, so Mike, right when I give you credit, I have to snatch it back. This is such a big Sam Cassell house. I love Sam Cassell. You take that bullcrap someplace else. You're barking up the wrong tree, Mikey. You're not currying any favor with me. And maybe you don't care. Maybe you don't want to. I'm just not having it. I love Sam Cassell. All right, so this guy, here's something I don't really understand, but I'll read it anyway. This says, I was just texting back and forth with my buddy on how the 49ers had a great season, but we don't think they have a chance in this game. Been tired of losing these big games. And expect this one to go the same. Then Jerry comes on your program, and now I'm confident again. Let's go Niners. Joey in Omaha. Dude, you're a Niner fan, and you have no confidence? Let's go! Not the most knowledgeable Niner fan. Dude, your team is playing really well. And always plays well against the Rams. What do you mean you have no chance? You've already beaten them twice this year. You came back from 17-3. A 17-3 deficit to beat them a few weeks back. You've beaten them six times in a row. What do you mean you don't have any chance against them? Oh, but Jerry said so, so now I think so.
Let's go Niners.
Like this guy. I always shake my head when people say, we, when talking about their favorite team. We won. We this or that. Unless that person is Jerry freaking Rice. He can say we all day long. Saying Chris in Wichita. Yeah, Chris, I'm sure he really appreciates your permission to say we. I'm glad that he has your blessing. What do you mean you hate when people say we? He's synonymous with that team. Yeah, he did bounce around at the very end. But when you think of Jerry Rice, what do you think? You think Niners. The issue is not guys who had Hall of Fame careers with teams saying we when they're done. The issue is fans who never played a single down with a team saying we. Well, what do you mean you have a problem with guys saying we? Like, would you have a problem with, well, this is a bad example. I was going to say Troy Aikman because he's an objective analyst. No, Jerry Rice can say whatever the hell he wants about the 49ers. And you know what would have been great? If he picked the Rams, which would never happen in a million years. But can you imagine? If anybody would, maybe Jerry. Nah, never. But I'm sure that he appreciates your blessing, Chris. Thanks for saying it's okay for Jerry to say we about the Niners. Can Joe too? What else we got? Hey, Rome, very believable that Jerry Rice didn't know how many 1,000-yard seasons he had. Sign people who say they didn't see your text. Stephen PHX, you know, honestly, even though we had a little fun with that part of it, I tend to believe him. Why? Later in the interview, he couldn't remember if he went 16th or 17th overall. Something that, if you know anything about Jerry Rice, it'd be like Tom Brady not knowing where he was selected. If you know anything about Jerry Rice, you know that he was taken 16th, right? We all know this. He's Jerry Rice. We know where he played his college ball, and we know he was taken 16th, but even he didn't seem to know. So I tend to believe when he says to me off the top, wait, did I really have that many 1,000-yard years? I believe him because he didn't know when he was taken. We all know when he was taken. Like, everybody knows what number he was taken except the man himself. And you could tell he was kind of fumbling with it. Like, he was so locked in and so dialed, and that was the only part of the interview where he kind of tripped up. He's like, wait, was I 17 or 16? So what I'm saying is I believe that he did not know how many 1,000 yards seasons he had. Ken in SA, Rome, why the hell did you rip Matt Nellie's golden ticket? That call was a masterpiece. Signed, the artist who made the Brandi Chastain bust. Why don't you ask BC how she felt about that bust? It looked nothing like her. Nothing. Nothing. I mean, like, I looked at that and I thought to myself, dude, great bust of Pete Rose. Just kidding. Thanks, Alvy. Hey, Alvy, is that like, do you do that like gratuitously, or does that mean you really think that something I said was funny? Okay. Alvy's like, no, that was really funny. And especially when you act like you regret saying it. Oh, no, I do regret saying it. But I'm not the one that cut that bust. I'm just the one reacting to the bust. Hedstrom Bacon, quote, nothing like setting yourself up for failure. Signed, self-glossing and making the cover of Madden. Yeah, but you don't put yourself on the cover of Madden, right? Matt did. Matt essentially is like, I'm about to go John Madden of callers. I'm going to be the John Madden of callers. Watch this masterpiece. Nunzio. Matt now has a golden turd. Thanks, Nunes. Is he running around town going, I got a golden turd. Because I got a golden turd. Imagine firing open that chocolate bar and opening up and getting yourself a golden turd. Because I've got a golden ticket. Hey, Jim. I'd react to that call, but bum smack is still not show fodder, right? Nick and Erie. Yeah, no, it's still not show fodder. I just think, again, for the 1,000,000th time and hopefully the last time, making fun of somebody who has no place to live is not good form nor good karma. Hey, look at that woman over there. She doesn't have enough to eat or a roof over her head, and it's freezing, and she's hungry and sick. Why don't we poke fun at that? Idiots. Yeah, so no, it's not show fodder.
You're an idiot.
And a fat ass.
Fat ass.
Van Sizzle. Putting together a C-minus call does not denote a masterpiece. Andy from Denver. Wore Matt calling Teddy Bridgewater's 2021 season a masterpiece. You're really going to put a parody Larry tweet in front of me? You care about your job. You care about your work. And you're going to put a parody Larry tweet in front of me. All right. Here we go. Hey, Rome. Next time Matisse in L.A. promises you a masterpiece, have Chalk tell him to put down his toilet bowl brush, get in his van, and go. Hashtag Operation Shutdown. Get in his van and go. Get it? Van Gogh, masterpiece, toilet bowl brush. Larry, I know you're proud of yourself for that, but don't be. Any third grader could have done that, Larry. Like any first grader can do any of those parodies, my man. No offense. Yay! Wow, that's amazing. And then finally this. Hey, Rome. Finally. My beef. This guy's getting out in front of it, but I'll allow it. My beef in haiku form. It's called Nice Call Plumber. This is why I'm going to get out in front of it. I don't want this getting lost in the actual event. I'm going to run it back. Hey, Rome. My beef in haiku form is called Nice Call Plumber. It's a masterpiece. Says the guy with the plunger. No smack off for you. Chad from Orlando. Let me check it. 575. That's it. Nice job, Chad. I love a haiku. I love a haiku. Just remember, haiku is a very disciplined form. 575. 575. It's not three sentences. For a while, some of you try to get caught up in haikus with just giving me three sentences, like 21, 7, 58. That's not a haiku. 575, 575. It's a masterpiece. Says the guy with the plunger. No smack off for you. That's good. I like the way he titled it, too. Nice call, plumber. Trust me, Matt, the thing I like about Matt, the thing I respect about Matt, my man will be back. He will live to plunge another day.
Outro.
He's coming back. That which does not kill him will make him stronger. He's coming back. He's coming back to trade in that golden turd for a golden ticket. You watch. Trying to get to the top of the hour. Not trying to get there, but anxious to get there because I know the beef segment's coming. And we will come back. Also in hour number three, an NFL draft prospect, Kenneth Walker III. We do this every single year before the draft. I try to get you as many prospects as possible. Get their thoughts on what it's like, give you a better familiarity on what makes these guys go. Nick Mangold is my interview on episode 206. He was a blast, as you'd expect. In addition to the beef, if you don't want to participate in beefs, but you have a question, or you want to play in the ATP, do that too.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, so ahead of the beef segment, and this is your last chance to get through. So the Baseball Hall of Fame announced this new class, and exactly one player is getting in from the writers' vote. Exactly one. Which is actually an enormous increase over the last year when they fired a goose egg. This year, David Ortiz is the one player who gets in. And when he got the call, he was with Pedro Martinez at his side, so that was a pretty nice moment, actually.
Hello, I'm trying to reach David Ortiz, please.
This is David Ortiz.
Hello, David. This is Jack O'Connell with the Baseball Writers Association of America. I'm calling you from Cooperstown, New York. But you know that the baseball writers have elected you to the National Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yes!
All right, so that's fun. A nice moment for a guy who's beloved. But of course, because it's baseball and it's the Hall of Fame, the nice moment for Ortiz was overshadowed by the same guys who've dominated every single Hall of Fame discussion for the past decade or so. It was not about the guy who got in. It was about the guys who did not get in. Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and Curt Schilling. And of course, none of them got in. And of course, the conversation's all about them. Because this is baseball. This is how baseball does it. It's so very baseball that you can't have a good moment. You can't just have a nice moment in baseball where a guy who is absolutely beloved in Boston gets into the hall because baseball has to baseball the hell out of the moment. So instead of talking about Ortiz, all the conversation is about Bonds and Clemens, you know, just as it has been for the past decade. Give an example, quickly. How many people from the last 10 classes can you name? Probably not that many, because Bonds and Clemens are the ones that we're always talking about. Like, I don't care if Bonds, Clemens, and Schilling go into the Hall of Fame or not. I really don't at this point. I don't care. I stopped caring about that a long, long time ago. And I'm guessing that most of you feel the same way. If you want to put them in, great. Go ahead and do it. Put them in. Put them in with an asterisk on their plaques. Cool. If you want to do a steroid wing of the Hall of Fame, that's fine. If you want to keep them out, I'm fine with that too. I mean, I don't care. I've stopped caring. Baseball made it so that I don't care about this at all. And I'm sure it's all not going to get up in here and rage that it's a joke or a travesty that they're not in the Hall of Fame. I mean, there was a time when I did care. But that stupid argument has happened every year for the past 10 years, and it's never changed, so I'm tired of it. I'm not going to sit up here and say, oh my goodness gracious, because Roger Clemens was in George's box, but he's not in Cooperstown.
Roger Clemens is in George's box, and Roger Clemens is coming back. Oh my goodness gracious. Of all the dramatic things...
Like, what I would say to that is, of all the dramatic things that I've ever seen, this is not one of them. Because I don't care. Let me break it down. One, on the one hand, you've got a sport which at best turned a blind eye to guys juicing their brains out, and at worst, actively encouraged it. Barry Bonds went from looking like a normal human being to a dude who could have floated right down the street like the Macy's Day Parade. His head went from human to bobblehead. He didn't look like a Giants player. He looked like a Giants mascot. And he wasn't alone. I mean, who wasn't jamming themselves full of Bolroids at that time? Or rubbing each other up with the cream or the clear? And any other syringe they could get their hands on. And the sport didn't do a damn thing about it. In fact, they actively celebrated the results of them doing that. And by the way, we in the media didn't do anything about it either. We are not without blame, far from it. But then when it got out that everybody was cheating, not everybody, but many, the commissioner and the folks in the game acted all shocked. Shocked and bleep that this had been going on. Like the most disingenuous bleep ever. And a collection of self-important writers have continued this charade for another decade or so. And now they're going to punish the guys who did it, except not all the guys who did it. Because there was that New York Times report that Ortiz tested positive back in the day. But he still gets in, and on the first ballot. But Bonds and Clemens can't get a sniff. So are they getting jammed? I don't even care. Because I stopped caring about this almost as soon as they retired all their needles. It's kind of hard to summon up any sort of sympathy, right? For Bonds or Clemens. Hard to root for them in any way. But hard to say they're getting jammed. But I know the museum in New York is about baseball. It's not supposed to be about personality. There are plenty of really bad guys in the Hall of Fame. Even worse guys than these two guys, right? Ty Cobb was one of the worst dudes ever. He's in. He was a horrible racist, and he jumped into the stands to beat the hell out of a disabled fan. He's in. So you can't keep guys out for being bad guys. I just don't care enough about any of these guys to really go to bat for them because baseball is so far up its own ass on this point. Look at the sport. Look at what they've done to it. And I'm saying this as somebody who loves the game, honestly. Y'all like to crack on me for being, quote, Dodger Jim. Yeah, not in decades, but the fact is, I grew up being that guy. I grew up being obsessed with the LA Dodgers. My first idol in sports was the Penguin himself, Ron Say. Still love the man to this day. Yo, Penguin, what up? So I'm not here to hate on baseball. Far from it. I'm just here to tell it like it is. And they're currently locking out the guys, the players, right now. Lockout. You haven't forgotten about that, have you? And they're not getting much closer to an agreement. And even when they get good news, like David Ortiz going into the Hall of Fame, it gets butchered because everything in baseball gets butchered and has for a long time. I used to think that there was nothing more tired than discussions about the Baseball Hall of Fame, but I might have to shorten that. Right about now, there might not be anything more tired than discussions about baseball. Period.
Period.
The Baseball Hall of Fame used to matter so much, but not anymore. Not anymore, and I hate to say it, but kind of like the sport itself. Locked out.
Yes!
And if you're going to keep those guys out for bad guys, for being bad guys, you're going to let another guy in who's been accused of the same because he's, what, the best guy? I mean, is that what it's come down to? Or the evidence was too strongly against the other? I mean, all of it. Every year. I'm so over it. And if you're saying, hey, how can you not care? My response is, I don't care. I used to care a lot. Just not anymore. All right, I'll tell you what I do care about, though. The beef segment. It is here. We are going to eat. We all get to eat when we come back. What's your beef? Sports, non-sports. Always position it like this. And that's the best part. Sports, non-sports, personal, professional, family, social, co-worker. Anything you want. We're going to hit that thing hard, and we're going to hit it next segment. Call 1-800-636-8686. The What's Your Beef segment is next.